Hi, this is Brian McCallan of ACB Radio Mainstreams, speaking out for the blind. After today's show with Dr. Marlene Dressman of Vanda Pharmaceuticals, we're going to have a special interview with Tony Stevens. He's the public policy manager for National Industries for the Blind. He's going to talk about how NIB satisfies the personal and economic independence of people who are blind by creating, sustaining, and improving employment. But first, here's my interview with Dr. Marlene Dressman about the non-24-hour sleep-wake disorder. Enjoy. Welcome to Speaking Out for the Blind here on ACB Radio, where you're listening is our business. I'm Brian McCallan. This show airs every Wednesday at 10:30 p.m. Eastern. You may remember my previous show covering the non-24-hour sleep-wake disorder. Non-24 is a condition that causes nighttime sleep problems and daytime difficulties, including the overwhelming urge to nap. Biopharmaceutical company Vanda Pharmaceuticals is conducting research on non-24. The biopharmaceutical company is also studying possible medications for both pediatric and adult non-24 patients. To talk about Vanda's non-24 research and its impact for blind patients is Dr. Marlene Dressman. Dr. Dressman is Vanda's vice president. Hi, Dr. Dressman.
Hi. How are you, Brian?
I'm good. Tell us more about Vanda Pharmaceuticals' achievements in the medical community.
All right. Thank you. I will. Vanda Pharmaceuticals is a biopharmaceutical company, as you mentioned, focused on the development and commercialization of products for the treatment of central nervous system disorders. Vanda has developed two products from the clinical trial stage through regulatory approval, and these are currently on the market, Fanapt and Hetlioz. Fanapt is an atypical antipsychotic indicated for the treatment of schizophrenia in adults, and Hetlioz is a circadian regulator, and it's indicated for the treatment of non-24-hour sleep-wake disorder.
How did Vanda decide to embark on the non-24 project?
When Vanda first began working on Hetlioz, we recognized that non-24-hour sleep-wake disorder is really a textbook case of a circadian rhythm disorder, and that patients would very likely benefit from a therapy like Hetlioz because Hetlioz has a circadian regulatory property. And very importantly, non-24 is a severe chronic disorder which had no approved medication to treat it. It was an unmet medical need. And for those reasons, we decided that Hetlioz would be well-suited and very likely could benefit patients with non-24.
How common is non-24 amongst blind people?
Non-24 is very common. It's very prevalent. About 50 to 70% of totally blind people have non-24.
Why don't all totally blind people have non-24?
It's not exactly known why some totally blind people do not have non-24. It's likely that some people may naturally have an internal body clock that beats to a 24-hour rhythm or very, very close to it, and therefore they're able to stay synchronized to the 24-hour day. And another possibility is that some people who are totally blind may still have functioning photoreceptive ganglion cells that are specialized cells that are involved in regulating the circadian rhythm, but aren't the rods and cone cells, which are involved in actually perception of images. And so there's a different cell type that's involved in perceiving images versus those that are involved in regulating circadian rhythm. So it's possible that people may have still have some functioning cells that are just enough to be able to keep the body clock and trained.
How's non-24 diagnosed?
Non-24 is typically diagnosed by a doctor, such as a sleep specialist. The sleep specialist would interview the patient, and they'd ask questions about the patient's light perception, about their sleep-wake patterns, and they might ask the patient to do a sleep study to rule out other sleep disorders like sleep apnea. And they may also ask them to keep sleep diaries for 3 weeks or so to evaluate what their sleep patterns are like.
I hear that non-24 is often misdiagnosed. Why is that the case?
You're right, Brian. It is often misdiagnosed. Unfortunately, patients have told us that they've gone to the doctor many, many times and not really gotten satisfactory diagnosis or help. Unfortunately, until very recently, there was little awareness about non-24 in the medical community, including many sleep doctors. Hopefully, that's changing now because of advocacy groups like ACB, as well as through BANDA's work with patients and healthcare providers.
What sort of research is being done to help understand non-24?
BANDA is currently working on a study in children and adolescents who have non-24. The studies that are planned are designed to answer three main questions. The first one is to identify what would be the appropriate dosage strengths for children of different ages and sizes. The second question is aimed at assessing if tazemetostat treats non-24 in children ages 3 to 18, which we suspect based on the mechanism and the etiology of the disorder that it should, but we obviously need to test that that's true. And then finally is the third objective of these studies is to assess the safety of tazemetostat in pediatric patients as they develop at different developmental ages.
Is this the non-24 patient registry?
It is the patient registry. Parents who are interested in participating or having their children participate could join that registry, and then there may be an opportunity that they would be contacted for interest in participating in clinical trials.
How do our listeners join that registry?
To join that registry, you can do it on the web, and it can be found at www.non24registry.com. And there's a survey that you would fill out, and this survey asks questions about the child's cause of blindness, the age that they lost their light perception, the types of sleep problems that they experience, contact information for the parents, and whether the parents may want to learn more about potential clinical studies that may be ongoing.
I understand that with the research that BANDA is conducting, they're conducting interviews with non-24 patients, letting them give their testimonials about their experiences with non-24. Can you talk about some of their experiences?
Sure. I'd be delighted to share some quotes from some of the people that we've interviewed with. They've been really enlightening to me to learn more about what the patients have experienced in their lives. I have four quotes. The first one is from Angie, who lives in Ohio, and she is quoted as saying, "It's a good time to talk to your doctor. I tried to talk to my doctor, and they told me, 'You're a tired mom. You're stressed.' I now look back and know everybody has a bad day, but it was the non-24. It's the reason I'm tired. I can't concentrate because of the symptoms." And Ever from California, she wrote, "I have had sleepless nights, feeling very tired and sometimes not having clarity, like today. But anyway, it's been very difficult to function, but somehow I have been able to manage." And Jack from Louisiana, he says, "Wake up, Jack. I hear my wife's voice and the love underneath, and sometimes I hear frustration or sadness. I'm not asleep, I will tell her. I'm awake, I promise. And inside my mind, I'm thinking, oh man, I've let go again. I've let go of the demands of work, and my body is finally saying, I've had enough." And then finally, Anthony from Arizona, he writes, "I realize that I'm not alone. My children, my family, my loved ones, they're living this right along with me, these symptoms of this non-24. So as you can see, each one of those different patients' experiences sort of touch on some key messages, such as the one point that I've already talked about where doctors may not always recognize it, but that the patients really need to advocate for themselves and try to help educate the doctors about non-24 so they can get a proper diagnosis. And that that there's a lot of sleepless nights and patients may feel very tired during the day and have trouble concentrating. And that it's not just them who's suffering, but that it affects their family and friends, and that their friends and family need to learn about non-24 too to help understand what the individual is going through.
And understand their symptoms, because we're hearing from these testimonials a good idea of just a few of the symptoms that non-24 has, including the grogginess, the frustration, and so forth. Now, back to the registry for a second. Our listeners will probably want to know this. Is there a cost to join the registry?
Nope. To join the registry is completely free. And in fact, Vanda will donate $24 to a advocacy group that to a variety of advocacy groups, and you can actually include which one you would like it to be donated to, that have causes that benefit the blind population.
Maybe one of those groups will indeed be the American Council of the Blind, ACB Radio's very own ACB.
Yep, ACB is one of them for sure.
What are some of the upcoming non-24 research projects that the registry participants and our listeners might be eligible for?
The main one that we're working on now is the pediatric clinical program that I mentioned, where we are evaluating how tazibaltine works in children between the ages of 3 and 18, and we are just starting to get those clinical studies up and running, and so those are scheduled to have the first patient in early next year.
Where else can our listeners get help and support if they think they may have non-24?
Sure. There's two places. The first that they could go to is a website, and it's www.non-24.com. And they can also call to reach someone in person if they prefer, and that is 855-856-2424. And again, the website is www.non-24.com, and the phone number is 855-856-2424.
Are there any support groups out there to help people cope with non-24?
I am not aware of specific ones. There is a non-24 on the web. I'm aware of a non-24 sort of group on the web that has a blog or a dialogue. But other than that, I'm not aware of any beyond, you know, the ACB, the advocacy groups like the ACB that support, in general, people who have blindness.
That's okay. So back to treatments now. What other treatments is Vanda working on for non-24 patients?
Vanda's has recently been granted in January of 2014 FDA approval for Hetlioz, which is a therapy approved to treat non-24 in the United States. And we have also recently gotten a positive opinion by the European Competent Authority, which means that the EU will decide very soon whether to approve Hetlioz in Europe as well.
How can our listeners start talking about non-24? With their family, friends, colleagues, instructors, and even doctors? Even for those ones, what advice do you even give for those people who are afraid to even talk with these individuals about non-24?
That's a really good question. It's important to be able to go and talk to the doctors, and that can be intimidating for some people. And we have provided on our website on www.non-24.com a link called Living with Non 24, and there's a, it describes how to talk to patients, doctors, and friends and families. And it includes a doctor discussion guide, as well as information that the doctor may not know about Non 24 that an individual could take with them to first to read themselves and then take with them to the doctor's visit, so that they can have the information there for the doctor to read, and then resources that the doctor can go and learn more about it themselves if they're not aware of it.
How can our listeners contact you or Vanda Pharmaceuticals if they've got any questions?
Listeners can reach Vanda or me at on our phone number at 202-734-3400. But if they're interested in learning more about Non 24 or in learning more about Hetlioz, the best thing that they should do is call 855-856-2424 to speak to someone who's knowledgeable about Non 24 and who can answer questions from patients, friends, family, or medical providers, and can help them navigate their way to potentially being evaluated for whether they be a candidate for taking Hetlioz or not.
Is there anything else you'd like to add?
Well, yes, I'd like to thank you, Brian, for this opportunity to talk with you about Non 24 and your listeners. I really appreciate your efforts to raise awareness about this very serious, debilitating disorder. And myself and Vanda would like to especially thank ACB for their support in helping us to recruit patients for the Non 24 clinical studies, and for teaching Vanda so many important things about blindness. We really appreciate all that ACB and you, Brian, have done for us. Thank you very much.
You're very welcome, Dr. Dressman, and we hope that this information is going to help our listeners cope with Non 24 and lead happy and full lives. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you, Brian. Have a great day.
Before we go, I welcome comments and suggestions on today's episode, and past and future shows. Just visit and like me on Facebook at Speaking Out for the Blind, or follow me on Twitter at Speak Out Blind or Speak Out for the Blind. That's all for this edition of Speaking Out for the Blind. Thanks for listening, and remember to speak out. I'm Brian McCallan, and I'm here with Tony Stevens. He is the Manager of Public Policy and Advocacy for National Industries for the Blind, or NIB. NIB enhances the personal and economic independence of blind people by creating, sustaining, and improving employment. Tony joins us to talk about how NIB satisfies this mission. Hi, Tony.
Hi, Brian.
Tony, please tell us a little bit about NIB and its mission.
Sure. I mean, you had hit on it sort of at the beginning about, you know, I mean, ultimately our mission is to create and sustain and improve employment for people who are blind, with the end goal of and really sort of bettering the social and economic independence of people who are blind. We've been doing it for 77 years now, and primarily we're most known through what's called the Ability One program. It's a federal procurement program that allows nonprofit agencies to employ people who are blind or have other significant disabilities. And what they do is they'll create products or do services for the federal government. That employs roughly about 4,500 people who are blind around the country. We're a central nonprofit association, so we represent 94 nonprofits that really do all that work in the way of, you know, creating the products and the services, and we represent them here in Washington. You know, ultimately, these nonprofit agencies, it's part of the employment, and you can say, well, 4,500 people, but they also do a lot of the rehabilitation and the independent living skills for people who are blind. So each year, our nonprofits reach about 145,000 people who are blind around the country through some way of providing services. And for those that work on the Ability One, you know, it's also an employment sort of channel that gives them opportunity for finding a new career.
What are some of the major issues and challenges facing NIB today?
Well, I mean, as federal contractors, NIB has been watching closely the fiscal landscape of the federal government, particularly around spending. We, like most federal contractors, have really been feeling the pinch the past few years as Congress has tried to rein in the national debt, and it's done so through a number of measures. The most popular was called sequestration several years ago, which essentially created a 10% cut across federal spending. And that money, of course, has trickled down to the federal contracting sector. Another major area where we're watching and sort of monitoring changes is in the regulatory process for the federal government, particularly in the Department of Labor and Education. Last year, Congress passed the Workforce Innovation and Opportunity Act, and that made some major changes to the Rehabilitation Act for the first time in, I guess, 16 years. So they're going through what's called the Notice of Proposed Rulemaking process this past spring, a couple months ago. And what that did was, you know, it sort of said, here's the idea of how we'd like to change rehab. And they wanted comment from stakeholders. And there would be, if this rule goes into effect, some pretty major changes for rehabilitation agencies that serve people who are blind. So we're a bit concerned with that, and that comment period had closed in June, but at some point over the next year, we're expecting to see the final rules, and it'll be interesting to see, you know, what that's going to map out for people who are blind.
What is NIB doing to address these challenges?
Well, we're constantly engaged with advocacy on Capitol Hill and around the country. One of the programs that we run through our department is called the Advocates for Leadership and Employment, where we take people who are blind that are working throughout our network of nonprofit agencies and bring them to Washington to train them on best skills for really becoming empowered advocates for blindness issues. We also work with our agencies and with American Council of the Blind, American Federation of the Blind, and other nonprofit sort of representing organizations for the blindness concerns, and really work to create a drumbeat of messaging, you know, particularly around these regulation concerns that we're going to have in Department of Labor and Education.
From looking at the NIB website, www.nib.org, you offer programs for wounded warriors, future business leaders, and those who are interested in control management support or CMS training. Tell us about these programs and the other types of training that NIB offers people who are blind looking to start a career.
NIB is constantly trying to find new and innovative ways to not just create a job, but to create careers. So, you know, a number of the programs that you mentioned are, you know, some of our more recent programs that have been pretty innovative at finding new ways to create opportunities for upward mobility. Wounded Warriors, we're constantly reaching out to the Wounded Warrior community. We have someone on staff in our department that all he does is go to job fairs and go up to Bethesda, the military hospital, what used to be Walter Reed, and you know, meet the soldiers one-on-one as they're coming back from Afghanistan or from foreign theaters. They have a wide range of disabilities. He'll mentor those who are blind and work closely with them to let them know that, you know, the federal government and the contracting sector for the federal government are really areas that really embrace those that have served our country. So we're fortunate to have that opportunity to be able to reach out to those stakeholders and constituents and heroes in some sense. So also, you know, you mentioned the Contract Management Support Program, CMS, we call it. That's a relatively new program. It's only about 5-6 years old since it was sort of, you know, created. And what that does is we have a partnership with a Defense Acquisition University. And any blind person around the country, doesn't have to be someone working at our agency, can sign up through NIB to take classes for free if they need to have some certain prerequisite requirements for, you know, some college classroom credits and business and et cetera. But what it does is it trains them in the world of contracting, procurement, acquisition sort of disciplines. And we get to go have them take an online course for free with Defense Acquisition University, DAU, as I said. And at the end, they get credits, somewhat of a certificate, if you will, in contracting management. We've been able to place over 110 people in jobs in this area, and we've had 49 people actually moved into the private contracting sector and some even into the federal government. You know, these jobs are very well-paying jobs. They're high-skill jobs, and we find that it meets where our population, is really at right now, with people who have been working for a long time, but with the baby boomers getting older and older, are finding themselves going visually impaired or blind later in life. Our business leadership program is also, our business leaders program is also, a benchmark for success we've had over the past 12 years, where it takes employees throughout our network. And what it really does is create a space for them to get the confidence and the skills really to become leaders within our own network of nonprofits. We've had a couple members actually now become CEOs of some of our nonprofit agencies that have gone through the program. And that's been a big success as well. I think, you know, you mentioned our website, nib.org, nib.org, you know, really gets into more detail than, I guess, the time that we have here on this interview.
Tony, this information will encourage our listeners to become NIB clients and get the next job of their dreams. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you.
I'm Brian McCallan of ACB Radio, and you've been listening to an interview with Tony Stevens of National Industries for the Blind. Hi, this is Brian McCallan of ACB Radio Mainstreams speaking out for the blind. We will not be having a show on the week of July 8th, so we can bring you complete coverage of the ACB Conference and Convention in Dallas, Texas. We will be returning on the week of July 15th. Enjoy the convention.
Join me, Brian McCallan, on Speaking Out for the Blind. I interview famous and inspirational blind individuals and other specialists about a wide variety of topics, providing you with the steps to achieve your dreams. Speaking Out for the Blind airs Wednesdays at 10:30 p.m. Eastern, 7:30 p.m. Pacific, and repeats every 2 hours overnight and throughout the next day, right here on ACB Radio Mainstream.